My name is Tomás Escarrega, and you're listening to the Payers and Players podcast.
Welcome to today's podcast. Before we get started diving in with Tomás Escarrega, just a quick note about his playing career. Tomás was a collegiate player who played 2 years at LSU in Baton Rouge, Louisiana in the SEC. He's from Argentina, played ITF, and got to the top level of the game, ultimately getting to about a 13-7 UTR. Then he transferred after a coaching change over to the University of West Florida and continued his college career. Tomás is now a coach at the Tucker Tennis Academy. And so with that, let's dive into today's podcast. All right, so let's get into early tennis career. So Tomás has got a really prestigious tennis career. Let's start from when you were real young, 10, 12 years old, even 8 years old. How did you get into tennis? And tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I started to get into tennis because of my parents, especially my dad. He used to go, you know, to, we have social clubs in Argentina. So we will go there and play, and I will be by his side when he's playing with his friends. So that's how kind of I started. I was maybe about 6, 7, 8 years old, just with my dad. And then when I got a little bit older, maybe 9 or 10, that's when I started just practicing more and getting, you know, more hours on the court.
Awesome, awesome. And so tell me about when you started to get serious. Like, at what point in your career did you start to realize, because everybody from Argentina likes soccer, mm-hmm. So you were probably playing soccer from the time you were 2 years old or even younger. At what point, though, did you say, wow, I like tennis, I'm good at tennis, I want to play more tennis?
Well, that became when I was probably around 12 or 13 years old. I was, like you say, practicing other sports as well, not only tennis. And it got to a time that I just had to pick one because I had to go to school and my parents had to drive me around the city just to go to different sports. So when I was about 12, 13, that's when I started to take it more serious. And I started to, you know, get more hours on the court again and just decided to stick with tennis, that it's my passion.
Yeah, that's awesome. And so how did you go from competing, more recreational, into a career where you started to get serious and really get to play at a very high level?
Well, you know, it is a pathway that I did. I started playing those local tournaments at home in my city, and I was, you know, winning them or getting close to the finals every time. And that's when I say, okay, maybe it's time now to start competing more, in traveling more inside the country, inside Argentina. And that's what I started doing.
What age did that happen?
That happened when I was about 13, 14 years old. That's when I started traveling more to play.
Yeah. So you got quite serious then.
Yeah, it got serious. By the time I was 14, I was already in the top ranking of my age. I was maybe top 10 in the country already. I was playing all the best tournaments in juniors. So I was like, this is what I want to do. I like this. I like being on the court, traveling. So I enjoyed it a lot. Yeah.
So at 10 years old, how much would you say you were on court? How many hours a day? How many days a week?
Well, I was probably on court basically every day from, you know, Sunday to Saturday, every day on the court. I was practicing maybe about an hour and a half from 5 to 6:30 p.m. when I was done with the school. And yeah, I will say maybe an hour and a half, 2 hours every day on the court at that age already. Yeah.
And then when you got to 12, what did that look like?
That looked like more hours, actually, more hours on the court, because I was able to get out of the school maybe on Tuesdays and Thursdays, I remember, in the mornings, to go play another extra 2 or 3 hours in the morning. So yeah, it was every time increasing hours and more time on the court.
And at what point do you think you went from, were you in regular school, and was there a time where you transitioned to like homeschool?
Yeah, and that happened when I was about 15. I went to regular school, you know, in the morning, and then in the afternoon just play tennis. And I think it was 2015 that it was a hard decision, you know, it's not for me, but for my family as well. And we decided to go homeschool, full online, so I could be, you know, in the mornings and in the afternoons on the court and getting better. So yeah, at my age of 15, that's when I went fully online on the school and didn't go anymore.
And so then you had a real prestigious ITF career, a lot of traveling all across the country. Tell us a little bit about beginning to play ITFs, some of the countries you traveled to, and what that experience was like.
Well, like I always say, that I think that's my favorite experience as a junior when I got into the ITF junior circuit. It was a lot of fun, a lot of traveling, of course, not only playing in Argentina, but in South America and in Europe, Africa. So that was great. I started early in, I think, 2016. I played my first ITFs in Europe. I did pretty well. I got to a couple finals. I won some doubles. So my ranking started to build up. I was already about 300, 400. And that's when I started to play mainly ITF, not playing so much, national tournaments. And it got to the point where I found myself being top 100. I was 60 in the world. And yeah, I was playing all the best ITFs in the world. So I played Grade A's back in that moment. In Italy, I didn't get to play the Grand Slams. I got injured. I had a full year to play 2018, and I got injured at the beginning during the preseason. I was in the main draw in all of them, but it was a great experience. I mean, traveling, by yourself when you're that young and just having to figure it out by yourself, it is a nice challenge. So I think that, yeah, that was my favorite part of my career, I will say.
Yeah, I think it's always good that coaches here at the academy have an understanding of that level of play. So traveling, going across continents, playing at a very high level is nothing that's new to you.
Mm-hmm.
And so teaching students and working with students who can do the same thing is not a problem.
No, it's not a problem. It's the opposite. Yeah,
talk a little bit about that, how your experience in ITF and traveling all across the world, playing at a high level, at one point getting to a 13.7 UTR. Talk about how that impacts your coaching.
Well, it gives you a lot of experience. We have kids right now that are getting into that pathway like I did. So I have the experience. I know what it looks like. I know what are the kids going to get from that. So it's just trying to talk to them, trying to, tell them a little bit about my experience and how I did it and what you have to expect from them, what are the times. And yeah, it's just basically just trying to help them as much as you can with what you have done, what you could have done better, and the good things about it. Yeah.
So you transitioned from that, had an injury, left wrist injury. Tell us then you made the decision to go play college tennis. Tell us about how you made that decision.
Well, it wasn't an easy decision because I still had the entire year. It was 2018 that my injury happened in January. So I had the entire year to play all the Grand Slams and the best tournaments in ITF. But this injury took me away from the court about 4 or 5 months. And in that moment, I was like, well, maybe it's time to try something different. Time to, see what's going on in America. I heard great things about college. I just didn't know about it. I didn't know at all anything about it. So I sat down with my parents and we decided that maybe it was time to see if I could continue with my education and of course, keep playing tennis. That was the main thing. So it wasn't an easy decision. I still wanted to try and play pro, but I think I took the right decision coming to college and live this experience.
Yeah, so you choose to play college. You're in Argentina, and you said that you had a bunch of people reach out and contact you.
Yeah.
Tell us what the recruitment process was when you're, say, a high school junior or senior, and how many schools were reaching out and what that experience was like. Because in Argentina, you may not necessarily know the difference in an LSU and a University of Memphis or anybody else. So tell us what that experience was like.
Well, like you say, people in Argentina, especially kids and who are playing and coaches, they don't know a lot about it. So I didn't know anything. I got reached out probably more than 50 coaches on my Facebook page. That's how they used to recruit. Maybe it's a little bit different now. And I didn't even reply to any of those because I in my mind, it was, you know, play an ITF, go to the pro circuit and see what happens. So I had a lot of coaches. And when I took the decision, I first did a verbal commitment to Baylor. I mentioned that. Yeah. And then.
And why Baylor? Was it because you knew Matias and he played at Baylor?
Yeah, I knew Matias. I knew he played there. And I knew the coach. And they watched me play in the Orange Bowl in 2017, and I had a great chat with them. And then, yeah, I ended up doing my verbal decommitment to Baylor, and that's when I went to visit LSU. I had a friend there, and he took me on a visit. I had a great time. It's a great facility. It's a great athletic department. So I loved it, and that's when I came back, and I told my parents, that's where I want to go. I want to go to LSU.
Yeah, go play for the Tigers there. Exactly. In Baton Rouge. And so tell us about your experience there, and then I know you transferred, so I want to ask a little bit about that. But tell us about your experience at LSU.
Well, my experience was great there. I wasn't expecting that level, you know, of like such a good facilities. You have everything. They treat you like you're the best player in the world there in any sport. It could be football, basketball, swimming and diving, or tennis. You have everything that you need there. So I didn't miss anything there. I just had everything, and it was such a great experience. I had a great teammates as well, great coaches. So I had a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun in LSU. When I was a freshman, we won the national championship in football. So that was great as well.
There when Joe Burrow and Coach O were there. Wow.
I was right next to those guys eating in the calf, you know. So it was great. Yeah.
That's wow. There's a lot of LSU fans probably listening that really are jealous that you got to have that experience. So I know there was a coaching change at LSU, but while you were there, you were playing 5 and 6 in the lineup, or 4, 5, and 6?
Yes, I was playing, you know, at the bottom of the lineup, 4, 5, and 6 throughout my 2 years. And yeah, not so much doubles, mainly singles. But yeah, I was playing 4, 5, and 6. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it surprises a lot of players that aren't from the States when they go to a place like LSU and they have to play in the SEC. Mm-hmm. And they play against Ole Miss. They go to Starkville, Mississippi, and play Mississippi State. And they go, I didn't even know Starkville, Mississippi existed.
Exactly. That's what happened to me.
And then the team is really good. Yeah. Were you playing at the same time like Nuno was playing?
No, well,
or Gio.
Those guys graduated when I became a freshman, so I didn't get to play against them. But yeah, I know a lot about them. Nuno is doing great on the tour, that's awesome.
And so, what was it? I mean, what are some of the towns you went into that you walked in and you go, I didn't even know this place existed. This is awesome.
Well, it's probably the one that you just mentioned, Starkville, Stark Vegas. Well, I didn't know. I had no idea that such a good school could be in that town, and it felt amazing to me traveling on the bus or airplanes with the team and the coaches. It's just so different to when you're a kid, you're used to, you know. So great experiences from it.
And what do you think about a place like Ole Miss when you go on campus there and you go through the town? I mean, it shocks people usually when they
shocks.
Come.
Yeah, it is super nice. Oxford is so nice. You just don't expect that, you know, being in Mississippi or in Louisiana or Alabama. But those schools are big, and those are very nice schools. Very nice.
And so give me a couple of memorable matches in college. One or two at LSU matches that you played that maybe you won in a third, or you were the clincher.
Yeah, well,
give me a couple.
Yeah, I remember. I think there was a match that we played VCU at home indoors. It was the beginning of the season. I think we were pretty similar rankings. I clinched it. I think it was 4-2 for us. I clinched it. I had one of my teammates playing still, and I remember I clinched it with a great point at the end. I think I served and came to the net, and that was an amazing atmosphere for me. Yeah.
Well, yeah. And so you mentioned serving, come to the net. Let's back up to your junior career. I mean, you're playing in Argentina, so it's probably all clay.
Mm-hmm, all clay.
And then you come to the States, and now you probably had to shift your game style a little bit because you couldn't just back way up and make
That's
a million
correct.
Balls. And so tell me about your game shifting.
Well, like you say, I had to adapt to it. You know, in college, everything is faster. Points are shorter. You know, players are coming to the net with maybe one or two balls after they're at the net. And like you say, especially in Argentina and South America, we are grinders. We are from the back. We try to make as many balls as possible, not make so many mistakes. And when I came to LSU and I tried to do that, I found myself in trouble. I had to, be a little bit more aggressive, try to start coming more to the net, do, serve plus one, serve plus two, and try to finish the point. So it took me a couple of months to get used to it. I struggled at the beginning. But then once I got used, I really liked it. I really liked it, being more aggressive, more offensive, trying to take time away from your opponent. Yeah.
There's a lot of coaches out there that are trying to take 10 and 12-year-olds and get them to make that same transition. Mm-hmm. And, it's real hard to make that transition if you don't have weapons yet.
Yeah, it is. It is very hard.
Because to get to the net, you've got to get on offense first. We got to get a short ball at some point. Mm-hmm. So when do you – I mean, obviously, I talk to my own child a lot about the objective of every point in tennis is to get on offense.
Yeah.
But if you don't have the weapons to get on offense yet, do you think – they're a little premature trying to be super aggressive? Should they maintain a grinder mentality until they gain those weapons? What do you think?
Yeah, I kind of agree with that. I think once you're a kid, when you're a kid, when you're, 12, 13, you need to get a lot of rhythm. You need to make a lot of balls. Yes, you need to come to the net. That doesn't mean that you need to stay all the way, all the match in the back. You still got to make some moves and try to be aggressive. But it's a process, it's a process. You can't just tell a kid to go and hit as many balls as possible, as hard as possible, try to win every point in two balls when you are 13, because that's not going to work. First and second, it's a process. You got to develop your game. Once you have the weapons, once you have the serve, once you have your forehand, that's when you should start, being, okay, now it's time to be more aggressive. Yeah.
Yeah, it makes sense. I think that's a developmental conversation that a lot of coaches miss.
Mm-hmm.
They want an 8-year-old or a 10-year-old to play the style that a 20-year-old plays, and they don't have the tools yet. They don't have the body yet. They don't have the physicality yet. And I think it's interesting that playing on clay, you had to play a grinder style, and then you came to college, and it only took a few months.
Yeah.
And you were able to transition.
Yeah, it took me a while. It took me a couple of months, but I got used to it quick. I always had good hands at the net, and I liked that game style. So it was a great change for me, to be honest.
So how would you classify a guy like Djokovic's game? Would you say he's more of a grinder? I mean, he obviously gets an offense.
Yeah.
But it seems like when the point counts the most, mm-hmm. and I feel this way a little bit about Nadal. Now, Nadal finishes at the net a lot. But how is Djokovic able to play that style at that high level?
I mean, I think his, physicality first is just insane. He gets to every ball. He's always in a good position to hit the ball. So that gives him more time to actually think what he wants to do. He's always on time. He's never late to a ball. It's rare to see him being late to hit the balls. And yeah, I think he makes a lot of balls, but when it's time to be aggressive, he's aggressive and he's going to take time away from the opponent. So that's why he's Djokovic. Sometimes it's hard to tell what these guys do very well because they do all of it together and it just looks perfect. So these guys are good, and especially him, I think he was able over the years to keep developing and keep going and add more weapons to his game, and now he might be the GOAT. Yeah.
Well, the reason I asked the question is when I watch college tennis right now, I see a lot of what you described. Points got to end fast, quick points, but I see a lot of misses on what I would call easy balls.
Mm-hmm.
Balls where they're set up, it's right up the middle. There's stuff that you just don't see a guy like Djokovic miss. You don't see Medvedev miss. You don't see some of these top players center, right? So is there a point at which players can be too aggressive to the point where they're missing balls they shouldn't? Like, where's the balance? It seems to me like Djokovic has found a really good balance. He can play offense when he needs to. But also, if he's up 40-30 on a nervous moment, he doesn't mind having to hit 20 balls
and
see if you're going to miss, right? Yeah. So, and you coming from a clay court environment, were you able to take some of the aggressive you learned, mm-hmm. but then an important point, say, you know what, today I'm going to be an Argentinian and I'm not going to miss on this point.
It is like that. It's finding a balance, and you got to understand in what moment of the match you are. Okay, you got to understand what are your strengths, what are your weaknesses, and in important moments, you got to do whatever you do the best. Okay, it's not trying to, you know, invent something or trying to do something new when you are in an important moment of the match. You got to take your strengths and you tell, okay, my best serve is, I don't know, out wide on the deuce. It's a deuce point in college for all. I'm going to serve out wide all day because I know I can rely on that serve. So it's understanding first what are your strengths, what are your weaknesses, what are your key plays that you do that you know that most of the time work, and then you just got to apply them, okay? It's more about that. Then, yeah, you a lot of players try to be a little bit too aggressive, I think, and that's when they start missing more. So you got to understand first your game and the situation. Maybe you're not in the right spot to go too aggressive. Maybe you're too far back. So it really depends on the match and your game still, yeah.
Yeah, so speaking of that, give us a few patterns that you loved. Give us two deuce side patterns.
Yeah.
So give me the one that was your go-to. So it sounds like slice out wide.
Yeah, I'm always on the deuce. I like to serve more, slice out wide. And then I will always try to go to the open court, go straight to the ad corner. And if I see the court open, I will try to move to the net now. Before, I will probably, serve out wide, try to go to the open court and start dominating the point with my forehand. But yeah, those are mainly my two ones, trying to go out wide and then to the open court right away. And if I'm not able to go to the net, I will probably stay back dominating with my forehand and trying, to hit an inside out and then an inside in and then another inside out, move the player around. So it's not always hitting, in that sweet spot and in the right position.
And so then let's say you did that 5-6 times. Then do you see him start to cheat?
Yeah, yeah.
And now are you going hard to the tee? What are you doing there?
Yeah, it's like, again, finding a balance. When it's working, I keep doing it, and I will try to, surprise him, maybe go fast tee or a slice tee or a good kick serve to change the rhythms. It's also about changing the rhythms. When you're playing, your opponent is getting used to your game, you got to change something. You got to change the rhythms, maybe start using more slice. It really depends. But at some point, if it continues to work, keep doing it. All right. If it's working and your opponent can't get used to it, keep doing it. But if you see that the match is getting closer and that your opponent is just playing better and it's liking now your style, then you got to try something new.
So most Argentinians then that were on clay on the ad side would say they want the kick way out wide.
Yeah, all the always.
Right, and then an inside in on the next ball.
Yeah, yeah.
Would you say that's your go-to?
Yeah, that's also my go-to. I always try to go to the open court. I like to go behind the opponents as well, but I feel more comfortable, seeing my opponent run and not staying just in one corner and trying to hit from there. I always try to get them on the run.
So explain to me why, when I watch Djokovic down 30-40 serving, not Djokovic, Federer, it almost seemed like he always hit an ace at that moment. And then when I watch college tennis, I don't see as many aces. Is it because he's hitting it faster in a better spot? What's the reason he was able to do that at the highest level? But then in college tennis, you don't see that near as much.
Well, Federer's serve, it was just so smooth. I think he had, the perfect serve. He looked great on it. His legs were loaded all the way down. He will go up to hit it. And it is like that. It's just Federer, It's impossible to compare it for me.
And there's no doubt his technique is perfect, and he's the prettiest player probably ever to play.
Yeah.
But why could he, against the highest level, produce that ace at that moment? And then you watch college tennis, and like we were at a match the other day, OSU against Memphis,
mm-hmm.
and we're watching the number two court, and I don't know that we saw maybe one ace the whole match.
Yeah.
But if 30-40, Federer, I mean, most time it was going to be an ace.
Yeah.
How does he do that?
I think it also comes to when we talk about college, there is a lot of pressure, too. As a college athlete, especially in tennis, you feel a lot of pressure. You want to, play good, and you have your coach and you have everyone on the court and the fans, it's not easy when you're in college, but that comes to these guys, the guys that are able to produce an ace or a serve that is pretty good and finish the point. That's why then you see them on the tour, you see them, you know, at the top of the rankings in college. Those are the guys that are able to find it, and that's why they become great athletes.
So, yeah. But is it a combination of he may be hitting it where you don't expect? Is that part of it?
Yeah, it could be. Yeah, it could be. Federer, I think he used to change his serves a lot. He will have every serve, you know, out wide, down the body or down the tee, and he will mix it a lot. He used to mix a lot his serves. He will not serve always to the same spot.
Right.
And you can see him, and I remember watching Nadal. He used to change, you know, the side. He used to be closer to the tee, and then he will maybe in the next few games go a little bit farther just to create more angle. These guys don't serve always from the same spot. They move around. So that's something that, you know, college players and juniors gotta pay attention to it, because you see them always serving from the same spot to the same side. And, well, you gotta change it, okay? You gotta change it. You gotta try something new, see what your opponent, if he likes it or if he doesn't. And that's how those little things can win you matches at this level.
Well, and that's why it's so interesting to me, Federer, because when you'd watch him, the serve would be 125 miles an hour. It wouldn't be like Ben Shelton, you know, crazy 140 or whatever. But then it would still be an ace. And I'm going, how?
The placement, Federer's placement of the ball was just unreal. He will place it, I think, whatever he wants. Yeah.
So just a combination of accuracy, enough speed, a little bit of a surprise. Man, it just, every time you'd watch it and you think, oh, he's going to get broke. No, there'd be an ace.
No, yeah. Right?
And so I think it's interesting for parents to think, what's the difference in the college level and the pro level? So two more questions about LSU. When you were playing there, who was somebody you played that going into the match you thought, oh, man, I ought to beat him, and then you got beat, and you were like, whoa, I didn't expect him to be that good. And then who was probably your best win while you were at LSU?
Well, I remember when I think it was the beginning of my sophomore year, we play one of our first matches was against Vanderbilt. They are in our conference in the SEC, and maybe at that time they were one of the weakest teams.
In Nashville, yeah.
Yeah. So I think that match we played it at LSU, but I played number 6. And again, I played against this kid who was injured, didn't play too much, and I thought, you know, this is the weakest team. I should have a good, you know, a good aim to this match and try to win it. And when I started playing, I felt like, oh, this kid is actually good. Okay, he's number 6. He's good. And now I think he was a sophomore back then, like me, and now he's a senior and he's playing one at Vanderbilt.
Who is it? If you don't mind saying.
I think his name is Jensen Kovlert from South Africa. His name is something like that. So as a sophomore, he was playing 6. Now he's probably a senior or a fifth-year senior, and he's playing 1 for them. So you can see how the process is, and those guys are good. And then probably one of my biggest wins was, I will say, that one against VCU. I think I played 4 or 5 against them. And that guy was also a 13 UTR from France, had a great career. He already was a senior, played a lot of matches. So that was one of my biggest wins in college. Yeah.
Yeah, sounds like fun. Then you made a decision, and I think there was a coaching staff change there at LSU at that time. You made a decision to transfer, and it seems like every foreign player loves Florida.
Yeah. I don't know, but yeah, I agree with that. Yeah,
you know, Everett's had multiple coaches that were from all over the world, Spain, wherever, and they always want to go to Florida.
Yeah.
Tell me. So then you got in the transfer portal, and you made a transfer to the University of West Florida.
Yeah.
Tell us about it.
It was like you said. I decided to get on the transfer portal. And again, I had a friend in West Florida, a lot of South American players there, guys from Argentina, Brazil, all over South America in West Florida. And I had a friend there, and I knew a coach there as well. So I was like, maybe I want to try it out. I already played at the highest level at LSU. Now I want to go to a smaller school, a D2 school, that I want to make a comment about that later. And yeah, it's just, I wanted to try it out. You know, it comes with less pressure too. It is a lot of playing, a lot of continuity that you keep playing, you don't stop. So it was a great change, you know, and I felt amazing about it.
And you got to play one or two singles and one doubles the entire time. So I think you enjoyed being at the top of the lineup.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah.
Talk to us about, I think there's a misconception all across college tennis on D1 versus D2 versus D3, especially among Americans when they see a great tennis player sign at a D2 or D3. And, you know, I made a comment to my son the other day. We're at Oklahoma State against Memphis.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a bunch of Americans rooting for not a single American player. Every player on both teams was foreign. And so really they're just there rooting for the logo on the shirt.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes in America we fall in love too much with the logo on the shirt.
Yeah.
Not necessarily the environment. And there's a lot of D2s that can beat D1s. We're from the southern section, from the south, and there's a bunch of them in Atlanta. But tell us what D2 tennis looked like for folks that don't know.
Yeah, well, that's what my comment was about. I know that a lot of parents hear this podcast, listen to it. So people think that D2, you know, if you don't go D1, the level is not going to be there.
Yeah, people will say D1 or bust.
Yeah, it is only D1, but it's the opposite. I played both. I played at the highest level in D1, and I played at a very good D2 school, which is West Florida. And the level is there. I played singles 1 and 2, mainly my 2 years. And I played guys that were high 12s and 13 UTRs the entire time. So that's, I think, you know, people think about, oh, it's D2, the level is going to be lower, or it's not that good. They're not big schools, their fan base are not good. But it's the opposite. Because it's such a smaller school, you know, all the athletes support each other. You get a lot of people watching your matches, and the level is there. I'm telling you, we were a top 5 D2 school, and I'm telling you, we were able to compete against good D1 schools. Like, you know, we can go there and play them, and, you know, have a good result. Yeah.
And so, and I think if parents go look, they'll see there are D2 schools. Is Georgia Gwinnett one of the D2s?
They are NAIA. Yeah.
And they're another example.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they
can
go and beat anybody anywhere.
Exactly. Yeah. yeah.
And you can go look at their schedule. They're beating D1s all the time. Tennis is just a unique sport.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like football, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and you're coming from a perspective of you got to play in the SEC and then you go play in a D2, and your experience wasn't all that different.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't different at all. I'm telling you, playing 5 or 6 at the SEC school, I was then playing 1 at the D2 school, and it was pretty similar, the level. The level was, it wasn't that far away, to be honest.
Well,
yeah.
It's real clear that Tucker is lucky to have a coach at your level that also had a playing career at that level. So let's wrap up with a couple things. So let's do first a this and that. So
okay.
I'm going to give you two things, and you tell me which you prefer.
Let's go.
And I'd like to also hear if any of these changed because of your college playing career.
Okay.
Right? So the first one, add or no add?
No add.
And what would you have said before college?
Probably add, you know, but as you get older and you get through college, you ended up liking the no add. It's fun. It is a lot of pressure, and if you like having pressure and competing, it is good.
Have any points that were match points, deuce match points?
Oh, yeah, it happens all the time. You don't realize sometimes, but it happens a lot of times where you're serving for the set or serving for the match to clinch, to win conference titles, and you find yourself in a deuce, and you don't know what to do there. That's the moment where you literally don't know what to do. I always try to serve on volley, try to finish the point quick, but there's some people that just like to stay back and make a lot of balls.
Just grind it out. Yeah, so full third set, or do you like a 10-point match tiebreak if you split the first two sets?
No, I like the full third set. I like that, yeah.
Why?
Just, I don't know. My entire junior career, I played 3 sets in Argentina. It's not like the USDA. In Argentina, if you split set, you play a full third set. You don't go to a 10-point tiebreaker. So I think just because of that, yeah, so used to play long matches.
Gotcha. So doubles in doubles, add or deuce side?
Deuce.
Because of your forehand?
Because of my forehand.
So who likes to play the add side? Is it lefties? Is it people who have a strong backhand? Like, who picks the add?
As a junior, I used to play on the ad, and then when I came to college, I started going more to the deuce because of my forehand. And yeah, if your partner is lefty, I will throw him to the ad to have the forehand, and we both hit forehands, you know. But it really depends.
Well, it makes total sense. I could see where if it was ad scoring, mm-hmm. the ad side player wants to be the guy who either ends the game or gets it back to deuce. Yeah. But in college tennis, where it's no ad, it really doesn't matter if you're deuce or
no.
ad.
Yeah.
So now you just go to the side you like better. Inside out or inside in forehand?
Inside out first. So you like to go inside out, then inside in.
So you like to go high and heavy to the backhand, and then
you work. Finish it off on the inside in.
On the inside in, do you go a little flatter, or is it the same type of ball?
I like to go a little flatter. Okay, a lot of spin on the inside out, trying to push your opponent back or create an angle, and then you finish with a good flat ball on the inside in.
Prefer indoor or outdoor?
Outdoor, yeah.
Outdoor, clay or hard?
Clay.
So still clay, even
still
though
clay.
All the time?
Okay. I miss it, yeah.
Should we do on-court coaching, yes or no?
Yes.
Why?
I think I mentioned it to you before. I think, you know, you see all the other sports, you watch them, and their coach are allowed to coach them, are allowed to talk to them, to help them throughout the match or the game. You see it in football, basketball, soccer, volleyball, all the sports, the coaches are on court talking to them. So I think for tennis, it's needed, you know.
Did it make a difference for you in college? Were there moments where you realized, like, whoa, this is nice to have somebody be able to coach me?
It is nice. It is nice because sometimes when you're playing, you're so focused or the opposite. You're feeling the pressure and you're not playing good. And having someone from the outside, you know, bringing some comments and some help, it is important, very important.
You win the coin flip. Do you serve or receive?
Serve, always.
Always. Like, there's never a consideration.
Never a consideration.
Tell me why.
I just feel better starting serving. I think if you are able to hold and then maybe you can get a break, you're already 2-0 up and you're going to serve again. It just makes a difference to me. You know, I just like serving first, always.
All right. So let's go into something called the fast feed. So when you were in college, your favorite restaurant on the road?
Well, there were different steakhouses, you know. I'm from Argentina with a lot of meat. So just going to a steakhouse, sit there with the team and order a ribeye or whatever it is, it's beautiful for me. So I enjoy those moments.
Gotcha. Most used app on your phone?
Probably WhatsApp.
Yeah. Do you communicate with everybody at home on WhatsApp?
Yes. Argentina and South America, it's only WhatsApp. We don't use text so much. That's why I had a hard time getting used to it when I came to America, you know, but I got it to work.
Probably everybody says that. Favorite tournament you played, no matter how old you were? 12, you could be 8 years old all the way up to now. What was your favorite tournament you played?
Well, I think when I was 16, I ended up playing the Junior Davis Cup representing Argentina. In Hungary, in Europe. So that was my favorite tournament by far.
Did you have a good match against somebody that the people out there would know?
I had to play for the third and fourth place doubles against Sebastian Corda.
Okay.
So I played him, and I actually beat him, saving match points in doubles. So that was a great moment, yeah.
Wow, that is great. Yeah. Do you tell me, and this is off the subject, but, I mean, do you really miss Argentina?
I miss it. You know, of course, the culture is different there. I miss being with my friends. I have all my family there. My girlfriend is there. She's still in school, so I miss her every day. And it is not easy, but I'm happy here. I'm happy in America. I'm having a good time. I enjoy coaching. I enjoy it a lot playing college. So I'm good for now. Yeah.
Got it. Tell me about your racket. Weight of the racket, what racket do you like?
Well, this is a tricky one for me because I played my entire career with Babolat until my last 2 years of college.
Pure drive, right?
I used to play with the Pure Drive. It was 300 grams, but I used to put more weight on it. So it was about 330 grams, maybe, I will say.
Unstrung, yeah.
And then my last 2 years of college, when I went to West Florida, I switched to the Yonex B-Core 98.
Why did you make that switch?
I think I played so many years with the Pure Drive that I got tired of it. I got tired. I felt like it wasn't helping my game too much anymore. So I tried different rackets. I tried some head rackets, the Radical, the Speed. I didn't try Wilson. And then I ended up trying the E-Zone from Yonex and the B-Core. And just the B-Core was the one that I liked the most.
Got it. Yeah. And now, are you on a Wilson racket? Or are you still
I am on a Wilson racket now. I am playing with the Blade 98. It's not, it is a stiff racket, but if you hit it clean in the sweetest spot, it feels amazing. So,
300, yeah. Is that one 300 or 305 grams?
I think it's 305 grams. So, yeah.
What string?
I use the Big Banger.
What tension?
48.
And grip size?
Grip 2.
Is that 4 1/4? I mean, yeah.
I think it's 4 1/4. Yeah, it is 4 1/4. Yeah.
All right. And tell people kind of how tall you are so they get an idea.
Well, I'm 6'1". Okay. In Argentina, we go by centimeters. Right. So it's it is different. That's one of the things that I'm having trouble getting used to it. But I'm 6'1 here. And
gotcha. So that gives people an idea of size.
Yeah.
Favorite movie? It could be a tennis movie, but favorite movie?
Well, my favorite movies, I don't have one especially. I think maybe when I was a kid, I liked to watch, you know, all those movies like Cars or Toy Story. And sometimes when I find them on the TV, I just watch them, you know. It's funny, but I like those.
Most foreign players say it kind of helped them learn English. Is that for you too?
Yeah, it is, because you know, you listen and you watch them in English. So that helps you, and you start, you know, thinking about those words and listening to them. And then when you move here, you remind that. So it is good, yeah.
All right, last question. One thing that you would tell your 12-year-old self today that you wish you had known?
Well, it's just to, you know...
And you can't say have fun.
Yeah, well, have fun, of course, and then... Just be disciplined, okay? Be disciplined with what you do. I think tennis players, we are very disciplined with a lot of things, but just be disciplined with the stretches, be disciplined with the warm-ups, be disciplined having good practices, and it's okay to have a bad practice, but try to, you know, find yourself in a situation where you revert that. You can start bad, but make sure you end in a good way. Eat good, you know, go to sleep early, and all that kind of stuff. I think it's, for a tennis player, it's very important to end it up, you know, in a good way.
So the same stuff you're probably having to coach your players on now.
Exactly, exactly.
You realize the
yeah, you realize
value.
It. And yeah, that's what I tell here the kids, all that stuff. It's very important for a tennis player.
Well, I know it's time for you to go, but thank you so much for being here. I hope you enjoyed doing the podcast.
Of course. I loved it.
Great conversation. I'm sure the parents will enjoy listening to it.
Thank you. Thank you, Robert. That was awesome.
My appetite, don't leave me high and dry. Oh, and I don't wanna jinx it, baby, and treat myself better spite. Don't wanna overthink it, baby, just treat. But I don't